Hello, everybody. My name is Craig King Cooper. I'm the founder and CEO of Uplift Kings, also an author, also a podcast host. You need to tune in to my interview of Chatters That Matter. In this interview, I'll be telling my story about depression. I'll be telling my story how I overcame life and how I'm able to uplift myself and other kings just like me. So tune in. Uplift Kings, crown up.
Hey, 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 you know me. It's Dr. Cheryl Bryant Bruce, MD, the celebrity doc. And we are here with another episode of Chatters That Matter. Let's talk about it. Today, we are going to be talking about a man's journey and preventing suicide and everything else in between. Talking about the struggles of a man in today's world. With me, I have the amazing, incredible Craig Cooper. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you so much for having me on. This is a quick introduction for myself. My name is Craig Cooper. I am a youth development specialist at Wheaton High School. I am a motivational speaker. I am an author, a former martial artist, and also very passionate about men's mental health. I am a person who's 15 years free of depression and suicide ideations.
We're excited to have you, Craig. And this is a topic of conversation that we've actually spent a year working on, the issues of mental health. Last year, we were largely focused on the hip hop community because of the 50th anniversary of hip hop. So we talked to a lot of men and some women included on the topic of suicide, mental health, depression, anxiety. But it's an ongoing conversation that we want to have because so many people are challenged today. We have so much coming at us that a lot of people are struggling. So we feel like it's an important topic for us to continue having the conversation. So before we take that deep dive into it, I just want to remind everybody that I am a true bona fide medical doctor. So there's the disclaimer that anything you hear here does not constitute a doctor-patient relationship between you and I. This is for information. We are here to educate, inform, and entertain you. So if you hear anything that you think pertains to you, we encourage you to take that information back and speak with your own personal physician regarding it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with our conversation. And I'd like you to start by, well, let's start at the beginning. You told me about your journey, so I'd like to share that with your audience. You started in the early elementary years.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for answering that question. The more that I speak on my journey as far as my growth, whether it's a podcast or there's a book or anything like that, the more I realize where they actually started from. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, everybody has a story or his favorite athlete, favorite doctor, whoever it is. Everyone has a starting point. And what I realized is that my journey started in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
As I paint this picture for you, let me explain this. So my fourth grade year was a very exciting year up until this point I'm about to explain. So, you know, a typical classroom setting has about 20, 35 students in a classroom. Mm-hmm. I remember the day like it was yesterday. This particular day, I'm having a great day. Having a great day, you know, school is great, it's sunny outside, it's kind of spring weather. We had the little square pizza for lunch, so I'm feeling pretty pizza. Good, you know. Yes, a classic. He's ain't got that now. So, I'm having a tickler day or whatever. I'm sitting in the back because I like to laugh and joke like most kids do. So a teacher pulls me out of class. Hey, Craig, come here. I'm like, me? Yeah, you, come here. So, you know, the teacher explains to me, hey, we're going to pull you from this classroom setting to another classroom setting. And I'm like, okay. Didn't really explain what it is. So, you know, so as I mentioned earlier, you go from a classroom setting that's 25 to 30 kids in a classroom to a classroom setting that's 3 to 5 kids in the classroom. Smaller classroom setting, no windows, nothing like that. Just the straight everything. So
sounds like prison.
Sometimes it felt like it. So I remember, because at some points when you're done with that class, you go back to your regular classroom. The school setting wasn't as opening, as welcoming as it is now today. Because I feel like those words that I'm about to mention wasn't really mentioned how it is now. I mean, back then. So I'm going back to the classroom. This particular classroom, my seat is in the front. So I'm kind of late and I'm very clumsy. So as I run back to the classroom, trying to hurry up and get to my desk to round my teacher, she, at this point, she's writing on the blackboard, you know, trying to get ready for the warm-up lesson or whatever.
Right.
And I bump my knee on the desk. Again, I'm clumsy. So I hear him up under a breath. Retarded kids are coming.
Oh, wow.
You didn't think that I heard her. She turns around. I see her looking at me, me looking at her, me, her looking at me. And I remember like a negative switch happened in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You think of your teacher, you think of guidance counselors, you think of any adult that's in the school system supposed to protect you in any kind of way.
Yeah.
If they do feel any kind of negative way about you, you're really not going to hear about it for the most part.
Right.
And I realized like that negative word unfortunately followed me up until my early childhood, to my teens, into my 20s, into my adult life. And I feel like that's really where the first chapter of my depression really started, of a negative word.
Right. And I mean, that is a common occurrence for children of color, especially when we start to talk about young Black boys. The statistical data shows that they become negatively influenced right about the second grade. And the second grade is where these kids start to fail to thrive, because that recognition that they are being considered as somehow less than becomes an awareness for them. And you all internalize that.
Yes. Yes, I agree. You know, the rough, honest part for me, and I say this a lot because it's the truth, I don't really have any memories of school.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on to 12th grade. So when a lot of people were like, yeah, man, I was in high school, man, I was on a football team. I was playing soccer. I was doing this, doing tennis, doing part of this club. I was dancing, singing. I was fighting for my life.
Yes.
Every single day was the hardest fight of my life. The hardest, it was like a silent cry that I didn't know really existed. Because again, you didn't. There was no men's mental health out there. You know, we didn't have podcasts. We didn't have Zoom, anything.
Right.
Plus, there wasn't many Black males in the school system. And it wasn't really someone you could talk to, say, hey, Mr. Such and Such, I'm feeling sad today. It was no one. It was like, boy, get out of my face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell do you mean you're sad? So it was no strong support system. So imagine for anyone that's listening, your son, you know, or your nephew or one of your friends or someone you know is stuck in those battles where you're afraid to speak up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid to advocate for yourself because you think what's been said about you is the actual truth.
When was the first time that you felt seen?
Wow. Meaning the school system?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I feel like I was never seen, to be mm-hmm. honest. And if it was, I don't have any memories of it. And if I right. was, if I was seen any kind of way, I probably blocked it out because I was so much in my head.
Right, right. So you were in your head as your coping mechanism, as your survival mechanism.
Yes. I really feel like I was in my head. And you know, like I mentioned earlier, I'm a youth development specialist. So a lot of my kids will come down and talk to me. And it's the weird part is a lot of times I'll be talking to a younger version of me.
Is that why you became a youth development specialist?
That is the reason why. At the time I was like, someday, I remember thinking to myself, one day I want to do something different. I want nobody to feel like this. I don't want that for them. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't understand what the title was and the vision, but I was like, at some point I want to get to a point where I'm helping someone else out, because I know what that feels like. I was the work before the work.
Right, understood. So As you're going through this process, when did you first actually recognize that you had some mental health challenges, that you had this emotional depression and anxiety going on?
Good question. I realized when I first noticed it, when my senior and junior year in high school, and like I mentioned earlier, it kind of followed me up until my teens. So at this point, everyone is graduating, everyone is excited about their journey, and I'm again still struggling to fight for my life or whatever. And I remember being like, thinking like I would never come out of this. I remember thinking like I'll never get to the point where I'm successful or I believe in myself or having a career path to that point, you know, so it's still stuck with me.
Do you think it's still impacting you today?
Today, I honestly say with a smile on my face, is not.
What was it that took you to get to that point where it no longer was?
What took me to get to that point, it was a number of things that happened at once. It was a thing where I'm gonna mention this in by telling part of my story. What happened was, after I graduated high school, I was still trying to find my way. At this point, I'm working at a fast food restaurant. And at this point, it got to my toughest battle happened like in 2008. We're to the point where it took me 5 or 10 times to get out of my house, like several times, crying over and over again, just to get out the house, right? And it got to the point where I had this plan for myself to take myself out. You know, pills in my hand and everything, getting write a goodbye letter, sorry, mom, sorry, dad, sorry, whoever was involved, because at this point, I'm too afraid to admit what I'm going through.
Okay, let me ask you a question there. Now, at that point, what we're talking about is planning on ending your own life, planning on a suicide attempt. For you at that point, because you said you were going to write a letter, and oftentimes when people really intend to go through with suicide, they don't leave a letter and they don't take pills. They want something that's fast and permanent, particularly men, you know, tend to take more violent modes that they know are definitely going to take them out. So at that point, were you really feeling like life wasn't worth living, or were you feeling like you wanted someone to see you and help you?
That is a great point. And what it was is both. It was confusion. What I got was a phone call from my mother saying, "Son, I love you."
Yes.
What I wanted is confirmation that I belong.
Yes.
What I wanted is for someone to say, "I love you." That's what I want. There's a part of me that said wanted to go, but a part of me wanted to just live another day.
Yes.
Part of me wanted that step one to say, "Son, I love you. You're worth it." Because I needed some validation outside of my own thoughts. So it was.
So when you looked in the mirror, that reflection that you saw back was not valid, was not worthy of living.
At the time, yeah, that's what I was sawing in the mirror, looking in the mirror, crying my eyes out. But it was a small part of me saying, I need someone to hug me. I need someone to say something to me. You know, it was like I was fighting two fights at one time. I don't want to be here no more, but I want someone to tell me that I belong at the same time too. At the time, I didn't understand what it was, but that's what the feeling, you know.
So when your mother made that call, and because, you know, that's a mother's instinct to know that you need it. When your mother made that call, she empowered you to embrace your own image in the mirror as someone worthy of being loved.
Yes, she empowered me in two ways. She empowered me with words over the phone, but she empowered me in person. That for the hug that I got from my mother, I will never forget to this day. It was the tightest excuse me for a second. It was the tightest.
No worries, I'm tearing up too.
It was the tightest hug I ever got in my life. Because at that point, I never thought I would receive that love from a female. But it was the tightest hug that I can like say, okay, let's try again. My mom was always my biggest encourager. She would always tell me, it's okay to fall, it's okay to cry, but let's try again. That's where, to this day, I still live in by those words. To get the hug and say, I matter, okay. I'm sitting there like, okay, I got a step one. Okay, let me try this. Step one is ugly, but I'm going to try to fight this, you know?
Yes. So I think that that's an important point to make, though, because we always talk about men being strong and big boys don't cry. And it's almost as if culturally society has built in that boys don't have feelings. You know, they're tough. All of those feelings are weakness, and that's girly stuff. Yet men are people, and the feelings are very real. The insecurities, the need to be loved, the need to self-love are all very real. And the pain that ensues when those needs aren't met is very, very real. So, you know, I hear your pain, even as you relate it, I hear and feel that emotion. And I think it's really important here to validate that and say, yes, big boys do cry and big boys have real feelings. And it's important for us to validate those feelings, both as men and as women. I mean, you know, men have to allow that space for other men. It's not unmanly to feel. And women have to embrace that in men. And I'm going to want you to talk about that some more because, you know, men get this pushback from women. I mean, we say, oh, well, we want a sensitive man. But yet when the men allow themselves that vulnerability, a lot of times you all get pushback from women. Oh, you know, he's not being a man. He's soft. You know, I need a real man. Let's talk about that.
Yes, exactly. At that point in time, when you think of the characteristics of a strong man, you think of muscles. Think of, well, my God, you think of people like Hulk Hogan or whoever, like got muscles, or the Hulk or whatever like that. It reminds me of a scene on Fresh Prince where the father, you know, disappoints him, and the hug that, to this day, when you see that scene, you can actually feel the emotion behind that.
Yes.
That was the first time I ever seen a man cry on TV. And you could relate to that, you know. At that point, like, oh, man, cry on TV. A man could cry. Like, that's different.
Yes.
So, you know, like we were saying, like, men do have emotions. Men are human. Men do cry. So at this point, 2008, you know, I'm trying to express, you know, what I'm going through with my ex. At this point, it's AOL Messenger, you know, showing my age or whatever. It's all good.
Yes.
It's on a video chat.
You've got mail.
So it's on a video chat. And I didn't really have a strong understanding what depression was. But the way I was explaining openly how it was about, you know, about, you know, just constantly having like a black cloud over your head over and over again. It follows you no matter what. You know, this time I'm telling my ex, we're on FaceTime. She can see me, I can see her. I'm like, yo, babe, I got this feeling. I'm trying to express it. I don't know what it is. I'm always sad. Like, can you help me? So it was a good 15 second pause. So I'm thinking I'm going to kind of get embraced the way I wanted to. And before that, a smirk. And the more, you know, a person smiles and goes like this.
Yes.
So the slowly the smirk goes, the slowly my tears come down my eyes at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, what are you, not a man? I say, yeah, I'm a man. Like, and he started to call me all kinds of names. She, at this time, it was MySpace. wrote a MySpace blog about how men are weak because they cry or whatever, and that totally just crushed me, and it kind of changed how I feel about showing emotion at the time. I was like, I say I would never, ever again open my heart to a woman ever again at that point.
Right. So I and that happens to so many men, unfortunately.
And what happens to so many men, I like to call it like a villain arc.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see a certain guys that happens in the story and there's certain things that happens to that person where they change how they feel, they change their personality, then they change. It could take one person to change how you feel about certain people to change. You're like, you know what? Never again. At this point, I get to relationships, but I wouldn't be vulnerable to anyone.
Right.
Now, fast forward to my wife now, right? When we first met.
Hold that hand up again. Hold that hand up again. Right? This handsome man is taken and he is happy and healthy.
So it's smiling. So
well, wait, bring wifey on the camera.
Oh, come here, baby. This is Tansley Affair. She's actually one of the speakers on Thursday. I mean, next Saturday, sorry. Right here.
Hey, Craig is going to be speaking at the Leadership Experience Tour. Hey, Tangina.
I'm speaking as well.
Yes, and thank you for being there to support our brother.
Yes, of course.
Yes. No. Okay. So
we'll give a shameless plug to the Leadership Experience Tour. We will all be speaking together at the Leadership Experience Tour on the 23rd of March in Troy, Michigan, with the fabulous Sean Fair from Sean Fair Consulting. And we have 45 plus world-class speakers all together on the stage that day. So if you haven't purchased a ticket to the Leadership Experience Tour, we encourage you to do so. And you can hit either myself up or you can hit Craig up in the DMs and we will make sure that you get the connection information to get yourself a ticket. So let's proceed though with this story.
Right. So at the time, this is 2018. The time where it's a long distance relationship. She's in Detroit, I'm in Maryland. And I had like two major back to back deaths in my family. My aunt and my grandmother died of cancer. Well, really close to it, kind of just really kind of rocked me. So at this point, I go to my aunt's house to get some things, you know, just to get some things out of her house or whatever to help the transition with the move. She calls me on FaceTime. And I'm getting nervous because I just got finished crying.
Right. And
replaying back in my head what happened to me in fourth grade. I'm replaying back in my head what happened to me in 2018. I'm replaying what happened to me with my exes about not being emotionally available, what happened. I'm like, okay, this is really going to show if this is going to work or not at this point, because I'm nervous because I really like her, you know. And she says, look at me. What? She said, look at me. I'm trying to try my best to hold my thug tears. Like, look at me. So she goes, the first time I heard someone say, open to my mom, it's okay. Slow down. I got you. And I let everything out at that point.
Right.
To the point we got together, I wasn't really like an affectionate person.
Mm-hmm.
She really helped me see the person that I am.
Mm-hmm.
Open about his feelings, open about how I feel, open about that I can communicate, open about whatever it is I feel and just completely be me. And sometimes men want to hear about it's okay. Yes, you want that man to make this amount of money. Yes, you want that man to drive this kind of car or this kind of job or this kind of body. But at the same time, is this, are you really emotionally available for that man that you want?
Right. And that's significant. Emotional availability. If you're going to be in a relationship, you have to make sure that you're ready for that relationship, which means that you have to assess for yourself, whether or not you have that emotional availability. And certainly that partner can help you in your journey. But if you are not emotionally available to that person, then there's not going to be relationship for them to even begin helping you in the journey. So you have to assess at some point, am I ready to take the risk of getting into a relationship? Can I be vulnerable enough to be emotionally available?
Yes, it's so true, even to this day. Not only, and also add to this, the same way she available to me, I do the same thing for her.
Yes.
You know, us guys, we want a wife. You know, we want a lot of things, but same time is the same things that you are asking for, the same things you should give out in return to. It definitely should be a two-way street in their relationship.
Say that again for the back of the room.
what you want in a relationship, you have to have the same thing in return. And just give me on both sides. That's his point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we just have such a toxic conversation right now going on between men and women in general, but particular between Black men and Black women. The conversation is just toxic. Everybody is throwing rocks at each other, and everyone is villainizing the other, and you know, making them everything but God's child. And it's a two-way street. It has to be a two-way street.
You know what? Also, I like to add to that. You know, up until before I met my wife, it was a point in I was getting into a lot of relationships, right? And they were unsuccessful. It got to the point where I had an honest conversation to myself. I had to hurt my own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want certain things, but how are you really showing up?
Right.
How are you showing up? A lot of times, we do say this person hurt me. This person did cheat on me. But how are you really showing up in a relationship?
Are you bringing more to the table than a fork and a knife?
Yes. Are you so hurt by your past that you're so emotionally available also? So that reason why that's not working also, I had to really dig deep. I'm like, oh my gosh, that was like a gut punch. You know, it's like, okay, it's like, God, I want a wife, but I need to figure out what it is to act like a husband also, involve my own individual nonstop self-love journey also.
Right, right. And I mean, I think one of the things that's important as we talk about self-love journeys is the recognition that for most of us, our worst enemy is ourself, and we self-sabotage our own happiness. Now, we blame others. We blame the significant other that we want, or we blame the significant other that we get, or we blame outside factors. But when it all kind of rolls down and we really examine it, oftentimes after the fact, after we've already busted the relationship, when we're able to be honest and look back on it, then we can see where we were the inciting factor that put the pin in the balloon.
Yes, that is so true. That's definitely me, my 20s.
Yes. We put the pin in the balloon and then we blame the balloon for popping.
Yes, so true. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have this conversation with her and she sees you and she allows you, empowers you to see yourself.
Yes, 100%, 100% true. To see myself in so many ways, but mm-hmm. also to help me see myself as an individual. That definitely helped. A lot of things that I'm doing right now, podcast, have my own podcast, be able to write a book, certain things. It was also through difficult conversations like, what do you want out of life? Mm-hmm. I was like, what do you want? I love the fact that she's very supportive, of her also. And a lot of times, like, I got this idea, and it may sound crazy, like, wait, let's act on it. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. You know, yes. I said, one day we're going to step on stage one day. Shameless plug.
Right.
So what happened was years ago, I explained the same vision that I had when I'm doing right now actively to my ex. It's like, I don't see that for you. I was like, but I got this vision. I got this idea. Like, no, don't you see it? I don't see it. And a lot of times when you're choosing a person to be with, you're choosing a person to be your boyfriend, girlfriend, fiance, and turn into a wife or a husband, you want a person who will match you in a certain way. Can you encourage them? Can they encourage you? You want a person to support your dreams? Y'all doing the same thing. So at the same time, it's like this.
That's what they mean when they talk about being equally yoked.
Yes. Yes, 100%. And the thing about being seen, I had to realize that I need to be seen for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times, us as individuals, we'll sabotage our own journey. Not just relationships, but opportunities, career goals.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, things. You Absolutely. Will talk yourself out of a dream job.
Absolutely.
Because of what somebody said to you back in the day. You will talk yourself out of an opportunity. Even a speaking opportunity for anybody that's thinking about speaking, you would talk yourself out because of your past. And you're thinking, this is me also back when I first started speaking. Oh my gosh, my journey, people are going to find out. Oh my goodness, people are going to find out what happened in fourth grade. And you're looking at your journey like this and you're realizing,
right,
man, I ain't got no shame because it's going to help someone else out.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, even if you turn into a stuttering mess up there, on the stage, if you power through for somebody out there who is a stuttering mess, they see you and they see you push through. They say, I can do that. I relate to the struggle. I can do that. It may be the first time that that one person has been empowered in that way. So even our mistakes can be powerful in uplifting someone else.
I love that statement. And that's why I created my own company called Uplift Kings. As I was crying in the mirror, I said, one day I want to look up and see a crown, which is why I have.
There we go. I love it.
One of something my students asked me, they asked me, what two phrases do you live by? I said, okay. There are two phrases I live by. Do you get nervous? Yes, I do. Do you do it anyway? Yes, I do. There are two things can happen. You can be confident and not confident at the same time.
Right.
Confident, stepping into a path again, the tour. You know, you're like, I'm so nervous, but I'm doing it anyway. I'm nervous to speak, but I'm doing it anyway. I might stumble over my words, but I'm doing it anyway. I'm pushing through no matter what it is. I got so many ideas and visions that are happening right now. And I'm like, My big vision may look so crazy, but I'm taking a step one anyway.
Right.
And another phrase I live by is the forever strong mindset. I got that idea from Kobe Bryant. That's my favorite athlete. That hurt my heart when he passed away. That
I know it did.
I cried off that one. That one hurt. And the way he approached anything, he approached it fearlessly, but he approached it in a way. He executed his vision.
Right. That's
the way he executed. And my phrase forever strong means my strong may be, I mean, weak today, but I'm doing it anyway. My strong is setbacks may happen in my journey. Some things may happen, but I'm constantly going no matter what.
So we're speaking to resilience there. And
yes.
In order to survive in life,
yes.
We have to be resilient.
Yes. 100%. Because life... Because you can plan the perfect everything, marriage, car, career goals, college path, anything, but life is going to happen. Sometimes life will punk you.
Yes, it will.
Life will punk you and they say, I dare you to get back up. What you going to do now? Your perfect plan got a roadblock in it. So sometimes you have to just wipe your tears and keep on going.
And I think in some ways that even though we plan the perfect life, those of us who have the biggest struggles perhaps have the biggest purpose because we're being tried and, you know, like a sharp sword, we're being honed, that steel is being sharpened against the rocks.
Yes.
So
yes.
As we're going through these trials, perhaps instead of looking at them as trials and negativity, we need to embrace them as things that are going to strengthen us and positive assets in our journey.
That is so true. One of my favorite speakers is Eric Thomas. Mm-hmm. And one of his quotes was, "Don't cry to give up, cry to keep going." You know, a lot of people who have like the biggest success stories and had them things that happened in their pathway to tell that story. So you're asking why now, right now, because you're feeling it right now. Mm-hmm. But later on, it comes into your victory story. It comes in you helping someone else out. I really believe right. You go through what you go through, you give thanks to God for bringing you out, and you extend that hand to the next person and say, "Hey, look, I've been through that. Let me help you out. Maybe you ain't got to go past that. Maybe you ain't got to take that robot. Maybe I can help you pivot a little bit because I see."
Right, right. Every trial becomes a part of our why story.
Yes, yes.
Becomes a part of our journey, and it becomes a part of what we can use to teach each other. I mean, I always say that there are only two purposes in life. There's one is to teach and one is to learn. And basically most of us are doing a little bit of both. You know, we spend all of our lives chasing around looking for purpose when we've really been walking within purpose all along, no matter what we may have done, no matter what mistakes we may have made along the way. Even those mistakes are within purpose because we're learning from them and we're coming with tools to teach out of those experiences.
I love that. That is so true. That's actually the name of my podcast. It's called the Walking Purpose Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Is my walk, it's even to this day, my walk is scary. My walk is nervous. My walk is got the hot coals in front of him.
Right.
But I'm going to keep on going. I'm going to walk and I'm going to smile and I'm going to enjoy this. And I had to tell myself, I am a walking purpose.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know, Tony Robbins has the walk of fire in his big seminars and all. And I have not done the walk of fire, but I've talked to a few people who have done it and have done it more than once. Oh. And one of the things that they relate was they were in a state of panic practically before the first walk. And they thought that because they had already done the walk, that they would not have that same experience. But she was saying that when it came to the point where she arrived at the pit to do the walk of fire a second time, she felt the same panic and terror. And those are real feelings that we go through, you know, every time I get ready to go on to a stage, as many times as I've spoken, as large as some of the stages have been, every time I get ready to go onto that stage, I have to woo-saw. And I remember somebody told me, and I don't remember who it was, but I remember somebody told me, if you don't have that experience before you go on to the stage, then you probably need to get out of the business. If you think that you are so fabulous when you go onto that stage that nothing could conceivably go wrong and that you absolutely know that audience so well that they're going to receive every word you say perfectly, then you are overconfident and you are not going to deliver because you are no longer going to have that edge.
Thank you for that, because that's how I feel this week about next Saturday. That's exactly how I feel. It's like you're nervous, excited at the same time.
Yes, yes. And I, you know, I'm feeling the same way. I've been to the leadership experience before. I've, you know, had the honor of being called to the stage yet a second time, but I still am nervous, and you know, my anticipation is producing a little bit of anxiety. And I want to be great. And I do remember I did an article called Success, Is It Hazardous to Your Health? And one of the stories that I quoted in the article was about Dustin Hoffman. And obviously, Dustin Hoffman was an amazing actor, one of the best out there in every single thing that he did. And even at his very peak, Dustin Hoffman related that every time, even the more successful the project was, the more anxiety he got about the next, because he says you're only as good as your last appearance. So if you don't measure up, people forget that you were great yesterday, because today you haven't measured up.
That is a good point.
So he said, you know, he would always have that anxiety. Am I going to be as good today as I was yesterday? I have to work extra hard to make sure that I'm not just as good as I was yesterday, but that I'm better.
That is an excellent point. And I look at my vision, and it just popped in my head, like an artist painting a picture.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started speaking, when I first started doing certain things, I got a small brush, right? And I'm still painting. So more I'm painting, the vision comes clearer and clearer. The more you step on stage for this event, oh, I can do this now. Oh, I can do that now. And it's like the more you do it nervously, because you're still painting that brush, you might be a little scared, a little timid, and that's okay. And you know what the great thing about the human condition is? Everyone experienced it.
Yes.
Like you just said, so when I see you, I'm like, okay, she's nervous too, but we got this. You know, nervous too, but we got this. So it puts the human condition at a better rate, because it's like, it's not just me. It's more known than I think it is, but it gives you that more encouragement to do it anyway. You know, if you do it if you are nervous. Continue to paint that picture and paint that brush for your career path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I'll use our mentor, Sean Fair, as an example. Sean recently did a project for me, and we worked together on something. And I made the observation that he seemed really nervous, and I had never seen him appear nervous before. And, he said that he was. And, you know, again, as confident as a speaker may appear, when they hit that stage, there's still that internal something that goes on within all of us. And it's that fight or fright, flight thing. And it's that adrenaline that pumps up. And without that adrenaline, your presentation is going to be flat. That adrenaline brings that energy to the presentation. That adrenaline brings the drive. So when you feel like you're nervous going onto that stage, or when you feel like you're nervous going into anything in life, then, you know, just think about you're putting on your warrior gear and ready to step into that battle prepared.
That is a good point. And something I tell my students, and they talk about like what they do when they get nervous. Sometimes they put me on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm a youth development specialist. Sometimes we talk, so we have like a circle that we talk in.
Right.
They ask me, what do you do when you get nervous? I say, what I try to do now, I try, like right now for next Saturday, even anything, I try to remember what it feels like afterwards.
Right.
What's the feeling afterwards? Like paint a picture for yourself. How are you going to feel? How are you going to feel like you're done? And you're saying, thank you for letting me speak, or whatever it is, or whatever opportunity it is. It's like, paint that picture for yourself. That's going to help you guide through whatever it is. You know, just remember what it feels like afterwards.
Right. And you don't even have to have had the experience yet. You can live within your imagination of what that is going to feel like, and let that be your driving force.
Yes.
And then the other thing that we always say is to make sure you understand your why. Mm. Why am I doing this in the first place? What is that end goal? And if you can stay in touch with your why, then you can power through anything. So let's talk a little bit more about feelings as we start to wrap this up.
Okay.
You went from ground zero flat on the ground because you've been laid out by the establishment.
Yes.
To being here, getting ready to execute on your dream, married to this wonderful woman who was a part of that dream. The emotional transition as you went through that. We talked about the mirroring thing, but what were some of the things that you did as you were grappling through? Because it was still after she allowed you to self-empower and see yourself embracing yourself in self-love, there still had to be some grappling as you came to this point of maturity in your self-growth. What were some of the things that you had to power through?
That's a great question. One thing I realized is I did this, and I'm sure a lot of men do this. Like when they get to in a serious relationship or a serious opportunity, not letting your past voice talk you out of what you're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of men feel like, I don't know if I'm good enough to be a husband. I don't know if I'm good enough to be a father. I don't know. I'm so scared that I may mess up. I'm so scared enough that I might not show up as perfect,
which is
a thing. And I had to talk myself out of those thoughts too, as I'm constantly working on myself and unraveling my self-love journey. Okay, depression's over here. That's in the past, but you still have other challenges that you may face. You'll have other avenues that you may face. The reality is a lot of men feel like if I show up anything less than perfect, it's over with. A lot of men feel like if I show up anything less than what I promise or make a mistake or any area of growth or having a conversation about, babe, let's work on this, that's met with, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. And I had to realize to this day, I turned out great.
Yes.
And a lot of men don't have an example of what a husband looks like, or have an example of what a father looks like, or have an example of what a college graduate looks like, because you haven't seen that close to you in your own individual eyes. So the thing is learning by trial and error, because you're going to, for one, let me say this to any guy that's listening. The thing of being imperfect is okay. You are human. It's the human experience. You're going to mess up. Your wife is going to mess up. You know, you're going to mess up. It's okay. You have to talk yourself out of, if I'm not perfect, it's not going to work. It's okay. That's what I'm saying. It's okay. Sometimes I make mistakes. Sometimes, oh, I should have did this better. Yeah, dang, okay. All right, cool. Lesson learned. Okay. If you live in your head about the things that didn't work more than the live in your head about things that do work faster, you're going to be trapped in your past way too much. You know, you got to constantly keep going. It's like, I'm here for a reason. I deserve every level of success. And that's what I still tell myself to this day.
Perfect. Perfect. And for those of you out there, whether you're male or female, you know, take it from the opposite side, whichever side you're on, and hear this. I mean, because males have these insecurities, so do the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
The ladies have these same insecurities. So it's up to all of us as potential partners and partners to realize, okay, she or he may not be perfect, but then neither are we. And let's work on this together and build together so that each of us is better together than either one of us could be by ourselves. And we need to take that into every aspect of our life. Am I better for doing this than I would be if I didn't do it? So I think this has been a wonderful conversation we've been having. I think that this is going to be super empowering to the men out there who hear it. And for all of you men out there, you've heard Craig's story about the pain that he experienced as a boy And I'm sure that you have your own version of that story. Reach deep, pull that young boy up, see him, and recognize that there's another little boy out there that is right now going through the same things that you experienced and needs you to say, little brother, I see you. I love you. As adults, we've been through these experiences. Again, our purpose is either to learn or to teach. As adults, we've already been through our journeys. Let's teach the little ones so that maybe they don't have to go through some of our experiences. They'll have their own experiences and challenges, but maybe they don't need to go through that particular one.
That's excellent. What I would say to any man that's listening or a teen that's listening, just know that you do matter. And sometimes we get trapped in our own head because of our own inner voices. Just know that even if you are in a struggle or in a battle, let's try again one more time. Let's try again. Let's take this journey 1 second or an hour at a time. Even if for the youth, like I tell my students, let's try to get through fifth period. Sometimes it be that deep. Let's try to get through first period. Let's try to get through lunch. For any man, let's try to get this journey one day at a time. You are worth it. Your pain is just a chapter. That's what it is, a chapter. Because at some point, you're going to turn the page and realize, look how far I come.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chapter. It's not a final destination. You are worth it.
That's right. How do you get through a 300-page novel one page at a time?
Right, exactly.
Absolutely brilliant. So let's tell our audience how they can get in touch with you if they want to reach out to you.
Yes, if they want to reach out to me, have an Instagram page. I am Craig King Cooper. That's my Instagram. Same thing on TikTok, but I don't do any dances or anything like that. Sorry.
And TikTok may be going away. So.
So maybe I might put one up. I don't know. But so that also the same thing on TikTok TikTok and the website coming soon.
Perfect. And remember, again, always any of our guests that you see, that you love, we'll have the contact information for them and we have their permission to share it with you. So if you can't find somebody that you've seen, reach out to us and we'll make sure that you get in touch with that individual. And he's given you his information. Go on over there to his social media, follow him, like him, leave a comment, let him know that you heard him. And the same for us. If you love this show, make sure that you follow, that you like. Please make sure that you share it with your friends. We are here every single week, Monday and Wednesday, on the radio waves and on the television. And if you happen to miss an episode, they are on in perpetuity on YouTube. So again, we encourage you to keep coming back and keep sharing because we do this for you and we thank you for joining us. Craig, thank you so much for being here and I look forward to hearing your speech on the 23rd and I look forward to hearing big things coming from you in the future.
Yes, thank you so much.
You have been listening to Chatters That Matter, and I again am your show host, Cheryl Bryant Bruce, the Celebrity Dom. See you again next week, Chatters That Matter. Let's talk about it. Health is wealth, and you are your greatest asset. Invest in yourself.